in 100 years.
That shit house,
if you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched. We're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
Hello and welcome to Two Guys, One Cup Summer Edition. My name is Charlie Clawson and this series is My Club. And this week, my guest is Shane D'Elia, celebrity chef, entrepreneur, and sneaker enthusiast. He is also a genuine Western Suburbs boy who follows the Western Bulldogs. We talk about the 2016 Grand Final, what it was like following the team back at Witten Oval, or the Western Oval as it was known back then, and what he hopes is going to happen in 2021. It's a great chat. So here we go, ladies and gentlemen, Shane D'Elia. Shane, thank you so much for doing Two Guys, One Cup, My Club. I feel like, you know, I do Two Guys, One Cup with another Bulldog supporter, but I'm glad that I've gone in a different direction. I feel like people have heard enough about Will's experiences. I want to go to a genuine Western Suburbs guy, someone, you know, who's red, white and blue to their very core. How did you get started following the Bulldogs?
Oh, mate, look, it's been a lifelong story and journey. I mean, my dad came to Australia in 1970, you know, really great time for footy, and started working at the Dunlop factory right opposite the Western Oval. So, and he really wanted to assimilate when he came to Australia. He really wanted to be Australian. And, you know, back then the most, you know, Australian things you could do was, you know, buying a Holden and going to the footy. So he did both. And, you know, all the boys that were on the production line with him, you know, took him in and said, mate, come to the footy with us. And he became a Bulldog supporter. So, you know, it's flowed through the veins ever since.
So was that like, were all the guys who worked at that factory, were they all Bulldog supporters? Was it a genuine like Western Suburbs kind of thing, a Footscray supporters?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, back then that factory was sort of, you know, you came to work at the factory and then you lived in the area and, you know, you really embraced sort of the area that you lived in and you supported the local club. So a lot of the guys that he worked with on the line were, you know, genuine Bulldog supporters. They'd park there and then even on their days off on the weekends, they'd use their you know, employee parking, because there's no parking at the Western Oval, to get into the Dunlop factory and walk across the road watch the game.
And so did you go to Witten Oval as a kid?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, it was sort of, you know, we'd go on the weekend. We had a bit of a ritual. Dad would, you know, make us do all of our chores in the morning, clean the house, help him in the garden, do all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, we were blessed in many ways as kids, but we didn't have a bucket load of cash, right? So, you know, we'd get up in the morning, we'd go to the bakery, we'd come home, Dad would make, you know, lunch, we'd pack it all in there with your cans of Coke and everything else, put his backpack on and, you know, make the trek down to the Western Oval. So it was great memories as a kid.
I mean, it's funny, you and I have like similar kind of stories in terms of how we got into football. Like my family are all St Kilda supporters. My dad took me to my first game. It was very much like a family bonding kind of thing. I do talk to some people on this show who are in families where everyone goes for a different team. And it just, I don't understand how that works. Like my family would not be talking to each other. If for instance, there's a Hawthorn supporter in my household, how is that going to go down? Like the most successful club in the era versus my club, it would suck.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, like footy for me has always been about your pack, right? It's about your tribe and your pack is your family. So it's a family. I've always thought and really strongly believe it's a family experience. You support each other. And if anything, it actually gives you a common ground to resolve some issues outside of football too, right? Like, I mean, I know that no matter what relationship my dad or I had as kids, when we got in the car and we went to the footy, we were now united again because we were supporting the boys and we were doing it. It was really good. And even now to the present day, every year for Christmas, I buy my brother and I buy my dad our memberships. And that's my Christmas present because I know we're going to keep celebrating it together all year. So it's great.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to the football with you a few times and I've met your brother and your dad. And they are like genuine dyed-in-the-wool, like Bulldog supporters, like evangelical about the Bulldogs almost. So as a kid growing up, like I know as a Saints supporter, you know, when I started following them was like the early 80s and that was like our lowest point. That was when we won like 7 wooden spoons or something like that. So do you remember sort of like, because the Bulldogs weren't bad. They were contesting in some finals around that period of time. But how do you feel like it shaped your identity? Were you like getting bullied by Carlton supporters and Essendon supporters and all those kind of big club teams?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, especially because, I mean, I come from a big family, right? Like, and I mean, my family are Bulldog supporters because my dad's story was that he came to the, you know, Footscray and worked in it. But my dad's also got eight sisters, right? And generally, I don't know if it's right or wrong, I'm not the most politically correct guy, but when we get married, our wives generally knock more. So, like, my wife was a St Kilda supporter, and now she's a Bulldog supporter. So when my aunties all got married, they didn't really have a strong allegiance to a footy club, but they automatically adopted their husbands, you know, club. So we've got, like, you know, Hawks supporters and Geelong supporters within our cousins' family group. So, you know, we copped a lot of shit. A hell of a lot. You know, you'd get it at school. You know, back then, you know, Auskick thing, it wasn't called Auskick, I don't think, but the footy players would come to the school and, you know, being in the Western Suburbs catchment area, they, you know, when they came, you suddenly grew an extra 2 feet because the bloke that was picking on you about the Hawks winning, suddenly when, you know, Scotty Wide was there, you're like, say something now. You know? there was a lot of shit given. But, you know, I think it helped shape you too, right? Like, I mean, I've always backed myself as a bit of a fighter, a bit of a hustler, a bit of a Western Suburbs bloke. And I think those moments of maybe not winning all the time and understanding you have to be resilient and you don't always win, but it shapes you. I think that they're the things I learned as a kid through footy. And then when you do have those wins, and like you were there to see it with us, you know, when we did have that big win in 16, it just makes all those years of bullshit worth it.
It was amazing. Like, I mean, it's kind of tragic in a way because I felt like the bridesmaid, you know, watching my best friend get married. And I was like, when will it ever happen to me? But it was an extraordinary grand final to be at. Like, just the way that game played out and, you know, it wasn't just that game. It was that entire final series was incredible. And sort of being there and, like, when I talk to other supporters of clubs that have only won a flag or, you know, or haven't won a flag, like your Freo supporters or whatever, there is this kind of justification for why we put so much energy into football that it's like, well, when it finally does happen, it'll be worth the wait. And I agree with that in some sense, but part of me is like, that's a loser mentality. That's some way to kind of justify being in a terrible relationship. But it did happen with you. And I remember sort of seeing, like, following all the news coverage after the match and all the wonderful stories that came out of it, but just seeing how, you know, Melbourne's West embraced it, you know, seeing people in the streets and, like, the way people are honking their horns and, like, going out and celebrating. And it was really, really heartwarming because the Bulldogs are genuine scrappers. Like, it's not just because they're from the west of Melbourne, but, like, as a football club and, you know, the history of them not even playing in a grand final since, was it like 1956 or something like prior to 2016? So there was something really, really romantic about it. Do you think that identity that the Bulldogs have of being the scrappers, do you think that will shift now that you've tasted success, or are you guys clinging on to that more than ever?
Yeah, no, I think it defines us who we are. I don't think we ever portray ourselves as being the underdog. I mean, you know, excuse the pun, but yeah. I think that whole fighting, grinding, blue-collar, you know, working-class mentality will always be, you know, stuck to the Dogs. But, I mean, it's when you were talking about, you know, when we won and the whole how the Western Suburbs rejoiced, and I think football rejoiced, to be honest. I mean, I think that was a resurgence for football culture and real Aussie football culture again. You saw people backing each other, and whether you were a Bomber supporter or a Hawks supporter, it was a great game, and it wasn't Sydney Melbourne, it wasn't none of that. It was just that this is a traditional club. They've been scrappers their whole career, and this is what football's about, you know. And I think that some brilliant stories came out of it. And like I spoke to so many different people from back so many different clubs, and they were all really happy. And it was the first time in a long time that I've seen the whole football community be happy for a win.
Well, it's kind of it's a reason why you know the Rocky franchise endures, or the Karate Kid, or any story about the scrappy kid, you know, who's coming up against an unbeatable opponent. Because if you looked at Sydney that year, you know, they were easily the best team going round. They had, you know, the best player in the league in Buddy Franklin. And you could just sense from that first kind of quarter when Buddy got injured, like, there was blood in the water, especially coming off the back of the final series. Like, you know, that prelim against GWS will go down as, like, one of the greatest games in history. I'm not sure how your heart was doing at the end of that game.
Oh, man, almost died.
But the fact that you got to that grand final in such combative fashion, you know, you beat Hawthorn, you beat the Eagles in Perth, like, there was just something irresistible about it. I don't think, well, personally, I didn't believe you were going to win. I don't think a lot of people going into that grand final thought you were going to win until Buddy's injury. And then it was like, oh, shit. Like you could see the young pups get their tails up. And there was just something. I felt like, for me watching that game as a neutral supporter, you just kept waiting for the Bulldogs to grind them down because you knew that they saw an opportunity in the way Bevo coaches them, which is to never give up and to play that real physical contested style of football. It was just a question of will the class of the Swans just be too good or will the Dogs be able to drag them down into the mud and turn it into a scrap?
Yeah. Well, you said I don't think anyone was expecting them to win. I bloody expected them to win.
Did you?
You know, I'm in a fortunate position. You know, I'm an ambassador of the club. That year especially, I'd had a really, really good relationship with, you know, the senior coaching staff, players, junior players. I felt like I was kicking the ball with them. You know what I mean? So, like, you kind of get caught up in that whole movement of we're going to win, we're positive. Because in the club, you think you're winning, right? Like if you're on the field, you're there to win. You're not thinking you're not going to lose. So I kind of selfishly, you know, it sucked some of the oxygen out of them and used that as my, you know, my own power. But I was in tears. You know, there's a photo, I think, at the end of me, my brother and my dad, and like you guys were sitting next to us. And I couldn't even speak, mate.
I have a video of you. I mean, you say you knew they were going to win, but when there was about 30 seconds to go, I walked down the stairs so I could get a shot of the group of you. And when the siren went, you are speechless. Like you were like a statue for the first 30 seconds. Like your mouth's open, you're just staring into space. Like it's a great bit of footage. But I mean, just the emotion and the release, like that's what I'll remember from that day, is just that entire bay that we're sitting in, who were the hardest of the hardcore Bulldog supporters, just like... That's 50 years of like pent up emotion, you know, just released in one moment.
I tell you, when I couldn't speak was the next morning, mate. I was that bloody hungover. It wasn't funny.
So let's go back to when you first started following the Bulldogs. So was there a player, like, was it all about Doug Hawkins when you started following, or is there another player who sort of captured your imagination?
Look, I mean, I think Doug was the kind of the icon, the pin-up boy back then when I started playing. But I mean,
Doug will be used in that context.
But you know, like what's been great is that I've actually had a chance to establish some really great relationships with some of the guys that I watched playing. You know, like I mean, you sit there. I think that you know you're watching sort of you know Rowan Smith. And, Chris Grant and Luke Darcy and Scott Wind and, all these great, you know, Gia and, you know, even Simon Garlick and, like, these guys that I sort of looked up at, you know, as a kid. They got a couple of years on me, not a huge amount, but, you know, you look at them going, wow, these guys are heroes. And then later establishing, you know, really genuine relationships with them. It's been a privilege. I suppose when I first started, it was kind of, like even like Simon Beasley was sort of, you know, and now I've got a friendship with his daughter, funnily enough. you had Simon Beasley, then you look at Richard Osborne, who came to us from Sydney. He was kind of like smacking in a few goals. And we've always been that club that's kind of taken sort of these superstars that have maybe dimmed a little bit, and then we bring them in and hope they're going to, you know, reignite the team. And they do for a little bit. But I think it's always a lot more rewarding when we can breed our own. And we're seeing that in the modern players, you know, with Bontempelli and all these other guys, right?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing I thought about, you know, the Bulldogs winning in 2016 is it's the Rocky analogy again. Like by Rocky 3, you know, he's appearing on the Muppets, he's doing exhibition matches with Hulk Hogan. Yeah. How do you maintain that feet on the ground, you know, hard workers, like working class footy team when you're the premiers? And I feel like, you know, from a commercial sense in terms of the sponsorship and all those opportunities and membership and stuff, it's great for the Bulldogs. But, you know, they can't lose that identity that has made everyone fall in love with them in the first place. How do you think going forward, you know, your list is still in really good shape. You know, who knows what will happen in the next few years. If you win more premierships, do you think it's a balancing act? Like, how do you maintain that those working class roots with still, like, you know, the excellence of on the field?
You know, I think that that's a really good question. And I think that's not just a football question. That's a business question and a life question. You know, what you're talking about is humility, right? I mean, how do you maintain humility, respect amongst yourself and the broader community with success? All right, because Australia's got this fucking terrible disease of, you know, of tall poppy syndrome and chopping down people who are succeeding. And it happens a lot. And because I think you can't always blame others, right? You have to look at yourself, you know. And I've always, not that I've been incredibly successful in anything I've done, but I've had a little bit of success in some things. And the way I've tried to maintain, I suppose, that Bulldogs heritage of I'm the Western Suburbs boy, I'm a hard grafter, is stay humble. You know, I think if we start getting successful more successful as a club, and we pack on some wins and we get some good sponsors and we get some superstars like we have, if they really stay true to those core fundamentals of what makes our club great, you know, those working class, honest, you know, really sort of transparent qualities, then we'll be okay. But as soon as that starts going off track and you start playing the fool and you start pretending like putting yourself out there as a target and talking too much shit,
yeah,
that's when it gets derailed. You know, that's when it starts to be, you start to become a target. That's when tall poppy steps in, and that's when you see it just come like a cancer throughout the organisation.
Yeah, I was talking to Josh Earle last week about, he's a North Melbourne supporter, and talking about, you know, the going out of the Wayne Carey era, those premierships in the late 90s, and then when everything fell apart, and it's like, well, how do you, you know, they had a superstar player, a bunch of really good players around him, and, you know, they were the dominant team for a number of years, but then eventually things do fall apart, players get older, you have to start managing that list. And it's really, really difficult if you don't have strong leadership. Do you feel like the list the Bulldogs have now with a player like Bontempelli, he's your Rolls Royce, your blue chipper, do you think that he's the kind of guy you can build a team around and continue to evolve in the way like a Hawthorn's done in the last 10 years?
Yeah, most definitely. I think with what Marcus, the great thing is that he's a really good person for you know, primarily. I mean, yes, he's a brilliant footballer, and he's and like all elite people, a lot of room to grow too, right? I mean, he's not at the top of his game. His best years are ahead of him. But he's a good person. He's got good values. He respects his sisters, his mum, his dad, and he's got the respect of the group because of what he does. You know, so you come in as a young guy. He was a target straight away. And he's just kind of punch through. But he's really humble. You don't ever see Marcus wiling out. You know, his Instagram feed isn't full of bullshit. You know, he is who he is. And he will, you know, I don't want to put the moz on him, but he could mess up sometime, right? He's a young bloke. That's what people forget as well. This bloke's, you know, he's at the top of his game. You know, good-looking bloke, you know, good rig on him, you know, making good coin. Eventually, shit, I mean, me at his age, I was a nutbag. You know, something's going to happen, right? But I think he's got the qualities that he has and the respect that he has amongst the group that he will always be a leader within there. And, you know, it's he's creating a good culture of people around him. You know, some junior players are coming. Imagine, I mean, I look back at, you know, look at every business in a succession form, you know, and I look at that era of Bulldogs with the players I mentioned before, you know, Scotty Wine and West and Chris Grant and Bubba and, you know, Jono and all these great players, you know, they came in with it as a young pups and looked up to a bigger era. They've now moved on. I mean, look at the young guys that we've got coming in the team now with that strong leadership group that they have, you know, with Lockie Hunter and, you know, and Jackson McRae and Bontempelli and, you know, and Wallace and all these guys who were our juniors not so long ago are now senior pack. And they're morally a good group of guys, so I think they'll be all right.
I mean, I think a lot of that, just from an outsider perspective, seems to come down to Bevo. Like, I think that he definitely has the players, and they listen to him, and he's kind of got that. You know, we joke that he's like the cool coach. Yeah. You know, rides his skateboard and stuff, and listens to the same kind of music that they listen to. But you know, in the way that you know they. That they moved on. God, what's his name? He plays for Essendon now. The package.
Stringer.
Stringer. The way that he came out, and you know, the sort of statement that Bevo made about that, and you sort of seen like he does speak his mind, Bevo, and I think he's really good with the press, and you get the sense that he kind of has instilled a set of values in these guys that you know if they all buy in. That will hold them in good stead. I mean, who knows? Like, coaches come and go, and you know, the minute you say his job's safe, he'll probably get sacked.
Yeah.
But I think you know that year of 2016 to me felt like you had a very inspirational coach who made these guys think that they could do anything, you know, if they all bought in, and they did. So they saw results. So now his job is to kind of, you know, the guys who experienced that premiership in 2016. You know, Bevo's got to instill them with leadership to then pass on to the guys you're bringing into the club now.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, Bevo, I mean, I consider him a really good friend. I mean, I trust him, and for me, that's a big thing. I mean, I really do trust him, and I know that he trusts me, and we can have a beer, no problem. But what he is, he's a leader of men, right? I mean, he's a real genuine leader, and I think his biggest qualities are his vulnerability. I mean, he's not afraid to be vulnerable amongst his group, and he's really honest. You know, so I think that they're two really strong qualities that maybe in the old era weren't as valued. I mean, do you think vulnerability was a valued quality from an AFL coach?
modern coaches, it's such a complicated job. You know, like they've got to be able to speak to all different kinds of people and motivate them in different ways. But Bevo also has a neck that's this thick, so I don't think anyone's going to be messing with him.
Have you seen his guns? They're huge, those bloody things. He's a giant.
So all the great players that have been through the doors at the Bulldogs, you know, is there one that stands out as like your all-time favourite? Is it like a Chris Grant or Scotty Wind, one of those players?
Look, I mean, as a kid, the Rolls Royce was Chris Grant, right? I mean, so kind of I was, you know, you followed him because he had this majestic way about him. And, you know, I think what resonates with me as a kid was, I suppose, his loyalty to the club when he was trying to get poached, right? And he kind of said, turned down the big pay packet and said he's going to stick by the club. And for me, I mean, I remember that vividly. It really made me, I was already a rusted on supporter, but that moment showed, no, this shows who we are as a club and we fucking stick by each other. And I kind of really respected him for that because he could have taken a bucket load of money. He could have probably been in a more successful team and who knows where his career would have ended up. But what he did in that moment is he really established not just his legacy at the club, but the legacy for the club. You know, that I think he defined what we are as a club. But I think, I mean, for me, I always liked the Bulldogs. We were the team of Wogs too, right? Like, I mean, I'm a Wog from the Western Suburbs. We always had a few, you know, Del Rey and, you know, Liberatore and, all, you know, all these guys kind of, you know, skirting around the club. You could have a few of blokes that I could probably connect with. You know, it wasn't all, you know, sort of blonde-haired, blue-eyed, pretty Aussie boys. There was a few rough, ugly Wogs like me in there. So, so it was like, I don't know. I mean, I think that to answer your question, probably Chris was the guy that I went, yes. But, you know,
it makes sense, you know. Like, it makes sense that, you know, the fact that he showed loyalty, because it kind of reflects, you know, your position as a supporter. Because the Bulldogs, there was no reason for you, like, you know, if you were to be like cold and objective, you know, what have the Bulldogs prior to 2016, what had they given you in return to earn your loyalty? But you had decided to stick with them because the, you know, a player, one of their best players ever, stuck with them. So the example of loyalty, I think it's for teams like ours where there's not a lot to celebrate, gestures like that are huge, you know. I mean, I remember Stewie Lowe was the same thing in the 90s where Fremantle, you know, offered him millions of dollars to go to Frio and he said no and stuck around for a flag that never eventuated, you know, and the same with Chris Grant. But I do think that in this highly professional modern game we have now where, you know, free agency exists and players move, like, you know, all the time, there is something about being a one club player. You can still, you know, inspire and also become legend at your club by just sort of sticking to that, even if you don't have premiership success.
Yeah, that's what I love about our code. You know, I think that a one club player, especially somebody who may not be in the headlines all the time. I mean, I think that they're the unsung heroes. The guy that is there, he does his whole career, battles through injury. Look at you know, Dale Morris, all right? So, you know, the one club player gave his body. And, you know, you talk about that premiership and Buddy Franklin being injured. I mean, Dale Morris played with a broken vertebrae in his fucking back, you know, and then ripped down Buddy Franklin in the last minute for then Boyd to go and kick that goal. So, you know, like, I mean, unsung hero, great leader amongst the team. Now they're in a coaching capacity. You know, these guys, you know, they're inspirational people and they don't get enough recognition for it.
How many times have you watched the replay of that moment? Do you reckon you could do the commentary yourself?
And the Western Suburbs are up. So it was one of them. You know, like, I mean, I think I pissed my pants when that happened.
There was a period of time after 2016 where if you went to visit Will, like 2 minutes with entering the house, he'd take you to the TV just to show you the last like 5 minutes of the grand final. Like it was insane. I mean, I can only imagine what it's like, you know, like having been there with you guys and sort of seeing like the joy and the relief. Was there anything unexpected that came out of winning that flag that you weren't planning on?
The fall from grace the next year.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that.
You were like, this is it, the start of the dynasty.
Yeah. Well, you always, when you're on high, you think you're going to keep winning titles, right? But, I kind of would have thought, maybe because I'm such a rusted on supporter that we had enough resilience and maturity maybe to keep moving forward. But what we didn't realize, well, we lost a lot of players at the end of that year, right? You know, like a ton of players moved on. So it wasn't the same team, you know, and then I kind of wasn't expecting that. You know, you kind of think, oh, we're up and about now, we're going to keep moving forward. But when you start peeling back the onion, you start to realize that it's not the same, you know, and it is, it did start our rebuilding process straight from then. So I suppose that's the biggest thing I didn't expect, but I should have expected too, right? Because when you start to look at it, you think, okay, yeah, we're not playing with the same people. This is a different team and it's not going to be the same result.
Well, it's so hard to judge because it's kind of like, you know, in 2008 when Hawthorn beat Geelong, when Geelong were like the raging favourites. And then Hawthorn fell off the map for like 5 years, didn't get back into the finals until like 2012. And you sort of had to ask yourself, like, were they ahead of schedule? Was this a freak occurrence? Like, you know, Will jokes that the Bulldogs weren't the best team in 2016, but they had the best 4 weeks of any team in the AFL. But it sort of does feel like, you know, because if you were in Essendon or a Hawthorn or, you know, West Coast or something like that, there would be serious questions asked about how can a team win a flag 1 year and then not play finals the next. But because you're the Bulldogs, Everyone's like, oh, yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Got a lead, you know, pass.
They got to the top of the summit. There's not enough oxygen up there. They've passed out. They forgot what they're doing.
Yeah, I think we got a bit of a lead pass. I mean, and it was probably the next couple of years with, you know, a bit hard, but I'm finding a lot of confidence from our season last year. Even the season before, I think we kind of did quite well. We started to build up some muscle around our young boys. And I think this year's, you know, at the moment, everybody's on top of the ladder, right? And you're always full of hope at the beginning of the year. But just from what, and I haven't been focusing on any other teams. I've just been looking on sort of our guys and how they're progressing. But the way you hear the coach speak, the way you see the list progressing, you know, you see even guys like Timmy English, you know, packing on a few extra kilos, and now he's got some support in the ruck as well. You look and you go, you know what, we've got the talent, we've got the speed, we've got that sort of sexy style as well. I think that we'll be all right.
You know, my problem with Tim English is his bloody haircut.
Yeah, I know.
Like, it's a nothing haircut.
It's like a fucking
He's in the western suburbs now. Can't someone go, like, you know, shave the sides of his head, put some channels in there? He needs a cooler haircut, right?
He needs a fucking face tat. can I tell you, if ever a haircut defines a person, his haircut defines, he is that guy. He's that really nice, softly spoken, you know, really beautiful boy. And his haircut is just like, you know, it's that's him.
Well, if we go back to another era of the Bulldogs in the late 90s, when, you know, under Terry Wallace, you were making those charges into the finals, two heartbreaking prelim finals in a row.
Yeah, thanks for that.
the Saints in 97 were kind of like, the Bulldogs and the Saints were kind of telling parallel stories going into that final series, you know, both one flag each. But the Saints had all these like glamour players and, you know, like Nicky Winmar and Rob Harving were the media darlings, you know, as the underdogs. And then you had the Bulldogs who were scrapping their way and clawing Paul Kelly under packs and, you know, and beating and bashing their way into the finals. Do you feel like that team in 97 and 98 that you had the players to win a flag?
Yeah, I think, look, if you look at the quality in that team, I mean, they had a great list. You know, these guys were serious talent and they've gone down in sort of Western suburbs Bulldog sort of folklore now. You know, these are some of the leaders, not just through that 90s, late 90s period, but even into the early 2000s, and they're still around the club. But, I mean, it's not unique to the Bulldogs. I mean, if you look at, you know, the Saints, or you look at Essendon, look at, you know, so many of these clubs who have always had these brilliant pools of talent, the story is the same. You know, there's years that they've made finals, they should have gone further, or they should have won more flags. So, I mean, it's not a poor me, Bulldogs should have won more in that time, but most definitely they had the talent. They had the heart, yeah. You know, but what was it? You know, what is that magic ingredient that wins you flags and gets you further? Is it facilities? Is it nutrition? Is it training? They're all the things we're kind of looking at now, but maybe they weren't such a focus back in the late 90s.
Well, I think it's also, there's an element of luck, you know, like it just happens that in 97, because I remember we had played the prelim on the Friday night, we beat North, and then I was listening to see who we were going to play in the grand final, and I was listening to and the Bulldogs were leading the entire game, and then in that last quarter, Darren Jarman goes berserk. Yeah. You know, there's a Libba goal that's disallowed, and the Crows get over the line, and it's just like, if but for a few key bits of play, the Bulldogs are playing in the grand final. Here I was, though, listening to that, going, well, you know, as long as we put someone on Darren Jarman, we'll be fine in 97. And then he does the exact same thing to us the following week. Like, you talk about, you know, clubs arriving ahead of schedule or just not being the favourites. Like Adelaide, you know, they stole two premierships. Yeah. Like the 97, 98, they just snuck in there, and that's right place, right time. And it can happen. It just sucks that it had to be our clubs beat to get.
Well, mate, what about those fleeting moments? I mean, I was as a neutral supporter, I was at that first premiership with you guys in Collingwood, you know, a couple more minutes on the clock and that would have been your game, right?
That's been my entire existence. Like, Shane, I got to tell you, there's been so many times in my life where I've not been able to sleep because I can see that ball bouncing away from Stephen Neil. And in my head, I'm like, if this keeps me up at night, imagine being him. Yeah. Imagine being any of those players. Like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, man, I have never experienced a more eerie moment in AFL than, I mean, I remember I was there with my brother, who were there as neutral supporters, scored a couple of tickets, best going to watch. I've been to so many grand finals as a neutral. It's the best because you're not invested in either camp. You know, it's a good night, good day out. And I remember sitting there, we had great seats. We're on the sort of the ground floor, you know, near a 50-meter line. Beautiful day. And you're kind of like, come on, Saners. You're fucking always there. Oh, and then the siren went and it was just eerie, man. Like, you kind of go, all right, well, what happens now? And then people started sort of standing up and you're like, what are you fucking standing up for? It can't be over. And then it was just over. It was like, that was terrible.
It's so St Kilda too that like the last grand final we play in was a draw and then they don't do extra time, which we probably would have won if there'd been extra time because we had all the momentum. And 100%. Then they scrapped the idea of a replay altogether. And it's like, great. So we were the test case for them to change the fucking rules. I mean, so a team could actually win a flag on grand final day.
Maybe I remember a few preliminary, you know, preliminary or elimination, I can't remember what it was, finals that we'd been to playing against your mob and fucking getting kicked out.
Two prelims.
Yeah, there's
two prelims, mate. Like those two, the one that, you know, again, because I meet some Bulldog supporters who really don't like St Kilda, and I've always wondered, like, well, how can you not like St Kilda? We're kind of like the same. Yeah. We're just like, we're the Bayside version of you guys. But then what I realise is that 2009 grand final, because if you watch the if you watch the replay of that, like Nick Riewoldt is the hero who gets it across the line, he does that kick off the ground, you know, there's 2 minutes to go, scores are virtually tied, and Riewoldt kicks that goal. But the leading up to that game, he was a protected species. Mm. Like, clearly Brian Lake is cautioned by the umpires, and he's playing a very physical Brian Lake style of game on Riewoldt. But there is one moment, I think it's in the start of the third quarter, where Riewoldt's jogging to position and Brian Lake comes inside and bumps him, which in any other game, you know, would just be ignored. But Riewoldt went down, maybe he was caught underwears, maybe he was a bit soft in the legs, who knows? Like, he might have played it up a bit. But it's an immediate free kick. And I remember that's the moment for a lot of Bulldog supporters where they're like, fuck you and fuck this team. Like, this is an illegitimate victory.
Yeah.
Are there any teams that you feel that way about? Do you have any teams that you hate in particular?
Oh, look, I'm not a fan of the Giants.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Of course.
You know, I'm not a fan of the Giants. Of course. You know, they're a fucking shit, pissful club, aren't they? I mean, just, you know, like, you talk about getting fucking everything given to you and then not having any fucking humility. I mean, like, Jesus Christ. Like, you know, I mean, just that. And that's what made that final against them up in Sydney so much better. You know, like that, I think that game particularly, seeing them, you know, claw and gouge and fucking be dirty scumbag bloody football players. You know, like, you sit there and go, you know what? You've created this and we still fucking beat you, and you still haven't done anything since then, so stick it up, yeah. And I'm like, that's the modern day rivalry for me. I mean, like, there's no other clubs. I mean, like, you know, Collingwood, yeah, you know, everyone likes to throw stones at Collingwood, but, you know, and it's not even Collingwood, it's the bloody supporters, you know, like, so it's not a hatred of the club or a rivalry. I mean, they're good enough. I mean, and to be honest, you don't need to hate on them because they fuck it up anyway. So, like, they mess it up themselves. But when you look at a team that's just been shit, it's been the Giants and the way they've treated the Dogs. So, you know, their future will be their punishment. They're all jumping ship anyway.
To anyone listening to this, it's appropriate we're talking about the Western Bulldogs because it sounds like you're in a club. There is some music pumping in the background. You know, it's very Western suburbs. You're rolling down the street in your Commodore with the windows down, just music pumping in the background. I do love the rivalry between the Bulldogs and GWS. I had Alex Williams on the show, who's a big Giants fan, and you know, he's talking about, like, the Bulldogs are the team that the Giants love to play. Like, they, as far as they're concerned, 2016 was an aberration. You know, it was an amazing game, but they still hold on to that as a time when they should have stood up and they didn't. And so I understand what you're saying about the Giants. I've been to a few Giants games, and they are, like, their supporters are the real deal. They're not just kind of fly-by-nighters. They're there. It's weird. In a lot of ways, the Bulldogs and the Giants should be friends because they're the west of Sydney and you're the west of Melbourne. You have a lot more in common than you'd like to admit. But the rivalry is amazing. I must admit, I went to a final with you in 2019, the elimination final where the Bulldogs lost, where Toby Green just went berserk. And you guys were so, like, you know, rabid, and it was great, but you lost. But I did remember talking to you and your brother after the game, and you were like, look, it sucks, but geez, Toby Green's a good player. You'd love to have Toby Green in your team.
Yeah. He's a piece of work, but I mean, you know, if he's in your club, if he's in your team, you'd like to have him playing for you, wouldn't you? I mean, like, there's definitely, like, you've always kind of had those players, and you know, you've had a couple in your team as well. Like, you know, everyone kind of the perception of Billy was the piece of work too, wasn't he? You know, but you wouldn't mind him in the pocket, and it wasn't until recently. I mean, this Christmas that just passed, I all afternoon sat down and had beers with Billy. And I never met him before. Shit, he's a good bloke.
You know? Did you ask him about the bounce of the ball? Did you ask him if that bounce keeps him up at night, like your mate Charlie does?
No, I didn't, but I will next time. But I've actually got a really good core group of mates who are all St Kilda supporters, and I mean rusted on St Kilda supporters. So it's funny that for a club that there's kind of been an unofficial rivalry with, and yeah, we've lost a few flags here, which you've then, well, not flags, lost a few finals with you.
Prelims, yeah.
But you know, but it's, I've got a lot of similarities too. Like a couple of my best mates are St Kilda supporters, and you know, it's there, you can share the same pain, you know what I mean? We haven't got one up on you, but I mean, we can share the same pain.
This podcast is called Two Guys, One Cup because it was meant to be about both our clubs having one flag each. But then in the first year of doing the show, the Bulldogs win and completely destroy everything, the entire concept. Is there a memory you have of the Bulldogs that is like your happiest? Is it the whole 2016 final series and grand final, or is there something that tops that?
No. Look, the final, it would be easy to say the final, and amazing. But I remember my dad, you know, giving his full paycheck, you know, to the Dogs when we, you know, did the fight back, right? When we were about to become nothing or merge with Fitzroy or something.
That was the famous Up Yours Oakley campaign, wasn't it? Up Yours Ross Oakley.
Yeah. I remember that on my school book at work, at school. I remember it on Dad's bumper of the WB. And, you know, we had the pins and the whole lot. But I remember the emotion around the club that day. You know, I remember being there when we were doing the tin rattling and being down at the club, and, you know, you couldn't really do anything. It was just kind of like you wanted to be around the team. And, you know, such an inspirational time, you know, seeing the greats of the club around you. And, you know, Peter Gordon's always been such a brilliant leader of our club, and, you know, he did a great job with his presidency, and I'm sure that Kylie will do a great job now moving forward. But I think that, for me, was probably one of the proudest moments. And being a Bulldog supporter, it really showed what football culture is about and how much that club means to the Western suburbs.
I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? Like, if you think about professional sporting codes around the world, like, this was not that long ago. The Saints did the same thing. We were rattling tins for the SOS Save Our Saints campaign in the late 90s or mid to late 90s. Imagine, like, explaining to someone who goes for the Lakers or Manchester United that to keep your club afloat, like ordinary mum and dad supporters were out rattling tins out the front of a ground. Like, it seems insane that a professional sporting code would keep a club funded in that way.
Yeah, I mean, and it's ridiculous when you think about it from a global perspective, and you know some of the big clubs, and you know, because everyone has this perception that football clubs make a lot of money, right? And there's all this money coming through it with sponsorship and everything else, but you know, they don't. You know, most football clubs don't make a lot of money, and you know, if you look at other, you know, soccer leagues throughout the world, I mean, some of those second division, even first division clubs in the lower rankings, I mean, they're in the same position, right? They're struggling. They're trying to find, you know, a couple of bucks to make ends meet. But that was I've only experienced it through my club. I hadn't experienced it through the SOS and everything else. But it was a real emotional time, and I was a young supporter then as well. So, and that was coming off after, you know, like we spoke before about Chris Grant standing up and saying that he's going to be a Bulldog, and then having to fight that battle. And for me, it just really anchored my resilience as a Western Suburbs Bulldog guy, and I've carried that through my whole life's journey.
I mean, I think that it's one of those things too, when you barrack for one of the smaller Melbourne clubs like the Saints or the Kangas or the Doggies, and whenever there's talks of mergers or relocations or whatever, and they always bring up our teams, and it's always kind of like, that's the only time I get shitty around. Like, I'm all for like the national competition and, you know, keeping this sport as and code as professional as possible and the economic realities and all that kind of stuff. But I hate the way certain clubs are offered up as sacrificial lambs so that West Coast and Essendon and Carlton and Hawthorn, you know, can keep their memberships. Like, it's like, you know, we're a foundation club. You know, we're one of the original Melbourne clubs, and there is a history. Sure, we don't have the success of the premierships and stuff, but our story matters. And I think, you know, that's why it's so important for clubs like the Bulldogs to have identifiable cultures, you know, that thing we talked about, that working class, the scrapper, the big immigrant supporter base, like all that kind of stuff is important because that is part of the narrative that makes up our 100% game. What do you think is the culture of the Bulldogs beyond, you know, what we've talked about? What would you describe it to people as being like?
Oh, as a supporter base or in the playing group? What are you,
as a supporter, as a club, as an entity?
To be honest, I live it. You know, I've never experienced more. I mean, this year we think about the year that just passed, right? 2020, and most people want to write it off. I mean, I've seen so many positives come out of last year. None more than this, and this is no bullshit, hand on heart. None more than the support, the trust, and the loyalty that I have found through my Bulldogs community. Like I launched a little business called Providor during lockdown, which was a multi-seller high-end restaurant marketplace. I mean, it has smashed through all ceilings previously set by businesses, you know, post-pandemic, in the middle of the pandemic, or ever will again. I mean, it did crazy numbers. And the only way we got that business up and running as quick as we did and to the level that it does is with the community that I've established throughout the Bulldogs. Like I needed legal work done to get this thing up and running. My first call was to Peter Gordon. I needed to build a platform. You know, lucky enough, one of the relationships I've built through the Bulldogs, it was a guy named Jason White and Sam Salter, Bulldogs Rusted On Boys from Williamstown. They own a business called Marketplacer, which is a multi-seller, multinational marketplace. They did the work for me. We needed some help with media and media buying. Chris Nolan is a Bulldogs board member, one of the best in the bloody world. You know, these guys all got around me, all supported me, and still to now, like, become mentors, friends, and I'm just going, you know what, this is what our club's about. It's about, yes, you're all got similar values, and you're scrappers, and you're working class, and a lot of guys, you made a lot from not much, but when your back's against the wall, and the chips are down, we're there for each other. And I just thought, that I didn't have to pretend it, because I lived it. It was great.
That's great. Like, you're the first person to have actually brought that up when I asked that question. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's ultimately what a football club is at a junior level. You know, it's a place to meet. It's a place to have community. It's a place to support each other. And the fact that the Bulldogs can have that as at the top tier, like, you know, professional sporting club, but there is still a level of access. You know, I don't know that if you were at one of the, you know, the bigger clubs like a Collingwood or a West Coast, that you're going to have that level of access, you know, to some kind of power broker who works at the club. It's a really, really interesting dynamic. I mean, it's almost like Hawthorn claimed to be the family club, but maybe the Bulldogs can stake more of a claim on that.
Yeah, I think we're the multicultural family club. I mean, I think what's been great about the Dogs, well, there's always a sense of inclusion. I think that we've really led that with, you know, whether it's cultural inclusion or gender inclusion. I mean, it's a pretty diverse mix of people in the western suburbs of Melbourne, and everyone treats each other as an equal. I mean, I think you've seen that through our playing lists, and then also with the board, and you know, all the other people that come together. It's really nice to be part of such an eclectic group.
Yeah, it's funny too. Like when I think about, you know, back in the suburban ground days when you were still playing games at Witten Oval, and in that era, that like Terry Wallace era, that famous game where Michael Gardner, the number one draft pick for the Eagles, was playing at Witten Oval for the first time, and as Danny Southern and someone else went up to him and said, "Welcome to the kennel," and just started like body checking him and stuff like that. And it's so great because I think that, you know, the Bulldogs can have that balance of being, you know, that intimidating scrappers, because they do still play, even though you've got a lot of silky players and, you know, you've got Bontempelli's or Rolls Royce. When you think of the Bulldogs on the field, at least when I think of them, I still think of them being a very physical, contested ball side.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember going to a few games at the Western Oval in the mud with that slanting ground, and you're seeing some pretty decent punch-ups, right? I mean, look, it's not a part of the game anymore, and I understand why, and times move on, but I think that was always really good about suburban footy back then, was that you knew when you were coming to the kennel, yeah, you should be able to kick a ball, but you might want to be able to block a punch too because it's coming.
That should be the membership slogan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to have like similar memories of going to Moorabbin because, you know, I live Bayside, and so it was just like, you know, a bus ride and a train ride to get to the ground. But I do also remember like standing in the outer near the animal enclosure, and like occasionally you'd feel like a burning sensation in the back of your head because some dude's watching the football and he's like, you know, his cigarette's gone too close to the back of your head, or, you know, I couldn't see the footy one day and so my brother's mate gave me a six pack to stand on.
Like, yeah, how good's that? They're the best memories. I mean, I remember with my grandfather was a police officer back in Malta, and my dad used to wear his trenchy, right, when we go, so with all the badges removed, obviously, but I remember my brother and I standing at the Western Oval watching the game in the pissing rain, and Dad had his big police overcoat on, and I'm under one side and Dad, my brother's on the other side protecting us from the rain, and looking back at the stands saying, Dad, why don't we stand out of the rain? Yeah, shut up, watch the footy. He goes, "That's for the Aussies, the walk stand in the rain." could you say that now? And would that still be, you know, whatever? But back then it was kind of like, oh, at least we know our place, just watch the fucking footy. But I remember standing in all those old cans, trying to get up and see people. You know, I mean, Dad would come and he'd stand with his mates that he'd only ever meet once a week at the footy. You know, he'd never meet and talk to them any other time. They do their thing. My brother and I would run to the front, you know, to the fence, you know, right between the races where the, you know, refs come out of and the players would run out of, and you'd create these unbelievable relationships, and you could just wile out, right? You there's a 13-year-old kid going, "Fuck this, fuck that." You'd never do that next to Dad because he'd give you a big clip around the ear hole. But it was just like, it was pure, it was fun, and you know, I think we're both really lucky to be brought up in that era of footy.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny. I mean, I do often sort of talk about, like, I'm conflicted because on one hand, I love the convenience of Marvel Stadium, you know? Yeah. I love being able to, like, drive in fairly easily and get out fairly easily and have an ATM and have a selection of food to choose from. But there was something great about visiting, like, you know, a Franklin supermarket before the game and stuffing, like, some iced Vovos and a can of Coke in your backpack before you went to the football. Like, it doesn't feel like you can do that anymore.
Well, that was the best. They're trying to push your body, you know, trying to get my brother through those little turnstiles that you have to go through, trying to squeeze an extra person through and, you know, like, it's just those shitty dunnies at the I mean, it was just, I don't know, it was something, it was a different time, right? I mean, you know, you jump in Dad's car and it's got no bloody aircon and, you know, the radio was all crackly, and I mean, and Dad had this thing about he'd always leave before the siren, like he'd never want to get caught up in the traffic, because there's traffic shit house around the world, so he'd leave, even if you're up, you know, even, like, he'd crack the shins if you're losing, oh, we're out of here. But even if you're up, you'd be like, "All right, time to go," and you're like, "No, let's just stay, I want to go on the ground and kick the footy." Oh, it's like, oh, and you get in the car and listening to the game on the way home and you're like, "Fuck, we lost." But anyway, it was a good time.
Is there any memory that is like your most crushing memory to the Bulldogs? Was there a game or a moment?
No, look, I mean, I remember I think we were with you guys. It was before 2015. We got knocked out against the Hawks, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Adelaide.
Adelaide? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Adelaide. It 100% was, because I could tell. So we watched the game. We left.
That's right.
We were there with you.
Yeah.
And I remember walking over the... I remember walking back into the city with thousands of Bulldog supporters, feeling so...
That's right. That was the walk to the G, right? Before the game was the walk to the G. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And I remember walking back crushed, like really crushed. And then I got a phone call from a mate of mine who's a big Adelaide supporter, lives in Adelaide. And I was a mix of emotions that day. I was walking over there, I was disappointed, I was angry, I was all over the shop. And then poor bloke, Adam Sanderson's his name, sorry, Adam, I mean, I'll give you a sorry now, but he rang me and tried to be a smart prick and like, fucking, yeah. And I unleashed on this guy like I haven't unleashed for like I was spitting and like, you fucking, I'll fucking kill you. Like, I mean, and people look at it like all that anger, and then I just ripped through him, and like I don't think I've seen him or spoke to him since, but it was just I felt sorry for him, man.
Picked the wrong guy on the wrong day, at the wrong time.
I was pretty crushed that day. But anyway.
Well, it had a happy ending. Only 12 months later, it was a happy ending. If the Bulldogs were to fold, if there was no women's team, if there was no men's team, do you think that you would continue following football? Would you pick another team?
Yeah. I think it's too much of a part of my life. I mean, I really enjoy it. I love the off season. I love the pre-season. I love it. It's a part of Melbourne. I'm a Melbournian. I will always be a Melbournian. I don't think I'll ever live in another state. I don't think I'll ever live in another country. I'll always be here. So, yes, I if there was no Dogs, I wouldn't just be one of these guys that kind of sits on the outer. I'd get behind another team. But there would have to be no Dogs. Like, it wouldn't be me making a conscious decision, oh, I'm leaving the Dogs and going to support fucking Frio. That's never going to happen.
Is there any idea of who that team might be? Is there any team that you have, like, an affection for?
Yeah, well, look, you know, you kind of look for teams with the same values, right? I mean, how do you learn the values of a club? I mean, like, you know, I know through people you know, through experiences, I've got a lot of St Kilda friends. I've got a lot of Richmond friends. A ton of them.
Don't wait.
Yeah, they're doing all right at the moment. And I've got a lot of friends, you know, like, you know, Benny Gale's a mate, and you know, and Dimmer's right. been a really good guy, and like we know a lot of the guys there. So I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're both clubs that I've followed. I know that I'm not an Essendon bloke. I'm not a Collingwood. I'm not a Hawk. I'm not a Carlton guy. I'm not that.
Silver Spoon.
I'm not that guy. It would have to be a Richmond or a Saints. It would be Richmond or the Saints, I reckon.
Well, we'd love to have you. If you want to come across to the Saints, we'd love to have you, mate. At least the catering would be better at some of our functions, that's for sure. Shane, this has been such a great talk. Thank you so much. Last thing we'll leave people with is predictions for 2021. Like, where do you see the Bulldogs? Are you top four? Are you finals? What are your hopes?
I definitely think I think we're finals. I don't know if we're top four. I think there's some really strong big body teams that will always have. I think big body teams is what's going to be something that always is an issue for us. Not always, but I think still today is an issue for us. I think we've got a really good depth in the list. A lot of talent. Which will help pull us through. So I definitely think we're playing finals. So, you know, you'd like to think you've got what it takes to go the whole way, but it's at the moment, it's just, you can, it's not about lists. It's not about money. It's about what you can sustain an injury, right? I mean, so who knows what the list is going to look like at the end of the year, but we've definitely got the will, the desire, the passion, and the skill. So let's see how we go.
It kind of feels like, if you took Richmond out of the equation, then it opens up a lot. I still feel like Richmond are still, like, you know, the team to beat. But if for whatever reason they don't have a great year, but having said that, I thought 2020 Richmond were not having a great year and they still won the bloody thing. So who bloody knows?
They're not that bloody good, mate. Don't give them too much fucking props. I mean,
Dimmer's going to call you after this.
I think they're a good team. They've got a lot of positives, but I think that what they've been able, I think the best thing that Richmond have been able to do is that they've been a good team. You know, I think that on and off the field, they've been a great team. I mean, there's been some things recently would probably test that, how good that team can be. I mean, they've always been really good. Their wives have always been friends, and everyone's always been friends. But I think that there's a lot of good teams out there.
And how good do you reckon Bont can be? How far can he go?
I think he could be one of the best players in of all time. I think he's a good person at his core. He's unbelievably talented, and he can play in any position. So I think that the world's in his hands. Hopefully he doesn't, you just touch wood and hope he can stay healthy.
Shane, thanks so much.
No worries. Good to see you, mate. We are two guys, one car.